from deep inside your radio.
And don't set your watch by that, ladies and gentlemen. That's all I can tell you. Don't set your watch by that, because we just started and we're running late. How does that happen? It's radio. Ladies and gentlemen, everybody's catching up. Ain't it pretty when everybody catches up? It was only a year ago on this broadcast, wasn't it? Wasn't it me that said, yes, it was. I'll answer the question even before I finish asking it, that all of our major trouble spots in the world today are the result of the Brits drawing lines as they skedaddled out of their empire. Think about it. Well, you don't have to think about it. You thought about it a year ago. Now everybody else is thinking about it. On the weekend Sunday Act shows, Richard Holbrooke, the former U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. under the Clinton administration, brought that point up. I don't think Dick listens to the broadcast, but he'd been doing some thinking. And also on the Sunday Act shows, this point now circulating for the first time in the Washington echo chamber. Iraq is not a country, because it was one of those countries that was imagined by the Brits at the end of World War I. Well, let's see. There's these three provinces of the Ottoman Empire. We could smush them together. And I believe Iraq is Arabic for smush. So that's how it happened. And now conservatives, ladies and gentlemen, like George Will, are saying, you know, Iraq's really not a country. It's three different groups of people, and they really don't like each other. And so we really may never have a unified and democratic Iraq, because such a thing would be a logical absurdity. Ladies and gentlemen, it's only, 4 months after the war ended, and it's a high time for a debate on whether we should have the war. So, hello, welcome to the show.
Chilling on the lawn, sleeping on the roof, drinking all the alcohol. All the kids from school will be naked in the pool while our parents are on Fire Island. Cranking up the tunes till the windows break, feeding chocolate to the dog. Jumping on the couch till the feathers all come out, while our parents are on Fire Island. We're old enough by now to take care of each other. We don't need no babysitter. We don't need no father or mother. We're old enough by now. Don't worry about a thing. Don't you remember last December when you went to Steamboat Springs?
from the edge of America, where it's sometimes it's cloudy, late night, early morning, then clearing by mid-afternoons. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to another edition of the last edition of the show for the American version of summer, because of course the astronomical. I don't think the astronomers concern themselves with summer, but in any way, the theoretical summer goes on for a little while, but the American summer ends Labor Day weekend with the telethon and everything. So it's the last list show of the summer, and it's about time the real issues are being joined in the California recall election. First of all, I think there's no truth to the rumor so far that Ringling Brothers is threatening to sue over the use of the word circus, giving it a bad name. But the real issues are being joined. Did Arianna Huffington have makeup expenses so high that those deductions canceled out her tax, her California taxes entirely? Now, this is being asked by Arnold Schwarzenegger, supporters of Arnold Schwarzenegger, because he doesn't wear makeup. Did Cruz Bustamante, when he was a kid, belong to a Mexican-American organization that advocated everything for the race, outside the race, nothing? And will he repudiate that? He was given four opportunities, ladies and gentlemen. Four. Count them. I'm holding up four fingers on Fox News to repudiate it, and he didn't repudiate. Lack of repudiation of youthful indiscretion. Oh, youthful indiscretions. By the way, a term that, if you've forgotten, was most recently popular in the political lexicon when it was brandished by a former House Republican from Louisiana, I'm proud to say, Bob Livingston, Republican, who described an affair he had at the age of 40, an extramarital affair, needless to say, as a youthful indiscretion. But Arnold Schwarzenegger's youthful indiscretions happened when he was in his late 20s, so the temporal stretching is not as apparent there. You already know about all of this, of course. It's the interview in We magazine. And doesn't Hugh Hefner wish he was still publishing that now? In which Arnie talks candidly. Arnie, Mr. Schwarzenegger. Well, I don't know. The candidate talks candidly about, I'm going to be delicate here, a gangbang in a gym. Gangbang upstairs in a gym. And he's had two comments on this so far, on consecutive talk radio appearances. No, one was on a talk radio appearance, one was in a press conference. The first reaction when he was first questioned about it was, I was crazy outrageous. I did a lot of crazy outrageous things when I was a kid. His second reaction at a press conference a few hours later was, I don't remember that interview. I was crazy, I was outrageous, and I don't remember. It's a coherent strategy. The supporters of the candidate, the Arnold Schwarzenegger candidacy, conservative Republicans, ladies and gentlemen, among them, are proposing that we move on because a candidate's private life and his private indiscretions of the past are not nearly as important as what he proposes for the future. Yes, it's what the Democrats used to say when the issue was Bill Clinton's indiscretions, specifically his indiscretions, his alleged indiscretions of the past. So the person I think we have an obligation to hear from at this point, and this is addressed basically to the bookers of the cable news channels. Can we get Juanita Broderick on the air right about now to talk about the consensual nature of gangbangs in a gym? Because she would know. Well, she would have an opinion. She wouldn't know, but she would have an opinion as to whether we should move on or not, whether moving on really is the appropriate physical strategy to be employed at the moment. And the other woman I'd like to be hearing from right about now is April Glaspie on another subject. April Glaspie was the last American diplomatic representative to have a face-to-face meeting with Saddam Hussein before he invaded Kuwait. And it was widely reported at the time that she had winked and nodded when he mentioned his interest in moving into Kuwait, and that he took that as a sign that we wouldn't react negatively if he did. And then, of course, he did, and we did. And it would be nice to hear from her now, too. So can we get cable bookers? Can we get Juanita Broderick and April Glaspie? Just give the women, give the gals a chance to talk, because I think we need to hear from them. I think we need to know whether it's time to move on, and if so, which way to move. But it did sound like a good scene down at Gold's, I have to say. Arnold Schwarzenegger did subject himself to kind of a grilling on the Sean Hannity talk show this week, and made clear his position on gay marriage.
Do you support gay marriage?
I do support domestic partnership.
But not gay marriage?
No. I think that gay marriage is something that should be between a man and a woman.
Gay marriage is something that should be between a man and a woman, ladies and gentlemen. You can't take a firmer stand than that. News from elsewhere now, ladies and gentlemen. The head of a company vying to sell voting machines in Ohio told Republicans in a recent fundraising letter that he is committed to helping Ohio deliver its electoral votes to the president next year. This is from the Cleveland Plain Dealer, because we couldn't find a fancy dealer in Cleveland. The August 14th letter from Walden O'Dell, chief executive of Diebold Incorporated, who has become active in the re-election effort of President Bush, prompted Democrats this week to question the propriety of allowing O'Dell's company to calculate votes in the 2004 presidential election. O'Dell attended a strategy powwow at Crawford with Rangers and Pioneers. These are wealthy investors in the Bush campaign. The next week, he sent invitations to a $1,000 plate fundraiser to benefit the Ohio Republican Party's campaign fund at his mansion in Upper Arlington, suburban Columbus. The letter went out the day before Republican Ohio Secretary of State Ken Blackwell was set to qualify Diebold as one of three firms eligible to sell upgraded electronic voting machines. But his announcement is still in limbo because of a court challenge over the fairness of the... So the Democrats speak out about that in Ohio, ladies and gentlemen. We have yet to hear, I believe, check me if I'm wrong, and I know you will, and you know I'm not, from any Democrat of prominence about the report a week ago from the Inspector General of the Environmental Protection Agency saying that thanks to political pressure from White House operatives, somebody in the White House, operatives is such a loaded word, isn't it? Some human in the White House humans, that's the least loaded word I can think of, thanks to that influence, EPA's reports on the level of pollution in the New York City air immediately following 9/11 were toned down. I guess there's a big debate in Britain and Australia about whether the intelligence reports in the run-up to the Iraq War were, in the phrase of the BBC report that started all this controversy, were sexed up. So I guess the way to describe the Inspector General's report on the EPA's findings about air pollution in New York immediately following 9/11 was that they were sexed down. In any case, it was a one-day story in the media. And people I know say, well, what's wrong with the media that they don't run with this story? And I say, isn't there supposed to be an opposition party that says, hey, wait a minute, and then the media cover that? And I think we're missing, if we're going to go teach other countries how to have a viable democracy, let's have an opposition party first, just in case. So, yes, there is a controversy in Britain and in Australia about the, quote, sexing up, the alleged sexing up of the intelligence pre the Iraq war. And that has led in Britain, as regular listeners to this program know, to a contretemps. Sorry about that, but sometimes you just have to speak French. A contretemps between the British government and the BBC. The British government, aided by the newspapers of one Rupert Murdoch, has been on an attack mode against the BBC. Well, looky here, from the New York Times. The government, the Australian government of Prime Minister John Howard, is in a battle with the publicly financed Australian Broadcasting Corporation, accusing it of biased and, in particular, anti-American coverage of the war in Iraq. Nutty coincidence farm. Another one's growing. Australia sent combat troops to Iraq, and the conservative Mr. Howard's battle with the well-regarded broadcasting system has focused public attention on the importance he places on Australia's relationship with the United States. His government submitted a list of complaints, 68 examples of what it contended was biased coverage. The ombudsman for the ABC, Murray Green. Hey, Murray. He looked into the accusations and issued a report that rebuffed the government. He found only two of the 88 complaints had merit. One story about the tenor of daily Pentagon briefings veered toward sarcasm. Ouch. Didn't swerve. It veered. And another dealing with President Bush's decision not to watch the televised first night of the bombing of Baghdad was too speculative. So that was. But isn't that interesting? That's a nutty coincidence, ladies and gentlemen. From Nutty Coincidence Farm. Some buried leads for your listening pleasure, ladies and gentlemen. This from the Southern California's leading dog trainer, sent by an emailer, of course, because I don't read the dog trainer. Quote, U.S. Civilian Administrator L. Paul Bremer III, who left Iraq this week for vacation and consultations in Washington, acted quickly to express U.S. sympathies and denounce the enemies of the new Iraq for the attack. That's way down in the story that we learned that Paul Bremer, in the midst of whatever is going on over there, has decided this is a good time to take a vacation. There was another buried lead in the New York Times this week.
I've got it over here. Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to leave the microphone area. Make the seat squeak while I get you this, which is from the New York Times of Saturday. This is a story about the continued rise in gasoline prices. Hey, weren't they supposed to go down after we... Yes, they were. This is saying all these people, all these truck drivers complaining about voicing similar concerns. This is deep in the fourth paragraph. But it's at the bottom of the fourth paragraph. It's not the lead. Voicing similar concerns because fuel prices are at their highest level, before adjusting for inflation, since the Energy Department began tracking them in 1990. And that comes as news to me. I don't know about you, that we've only been tracking energy prices since 1990. Wasn't there an energy crisis in the late 70s? Didn't anybody in the government say, you know what, it would be a good idea to track these? 1990, we started doing that. Other news from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. An American soldier, U.S. troops, may not have found weapons of mass destruction, but they're getting their hands on the Iraq stock of Kalashnikovs, and they say they need them. The soldiers have tanks, Humvees, and armored personnel carriers, but they are short on rifles. We just do not have enough rifles to equip all of our soldiers, so in certain circumstances we allow soldiers to have an AK-47, says Lieutenant Colonel Mark Young, commander of the 3rd Battalion, 67th Armored Regiment, 4th Infantry Division. That's why I never joined the military, too many numbers. They have to demonstrate some proficiency with the weapon, he says, demonstrate an ability to use it. Yeah, some proficiency would be nice before you give a guy a rifle. Some proficiency. You sure the bar isn't being placed too high there, Colonel? Some proficiency with a rifle. Normally, an armored battalion is fighting from its tanks. Well, we're not fighting from our tanks right now, he added. We're certainly capable of performing the missions that we've been assigned. There's no issue with that. But we do find ourselves somewhat challenged. U.S. soldiers in Humvees and on tanks, but never openly on a base, are carrying the Cold War-era weapon first developed in the Soviet Union but now mass-produced around the world. The AK is favored by many of the world's fighters because it is light, durable, and known to jam less frequently. Some U.S. soldiers complain that standard U.S. military M16 and M4 rifles jam too easily in Iraq's dusty environment. That was certainly the case with the group of soldiers, among whom were numbered former PFC Jessica Lynch. Apparently, according to some reports, all their weapons jammed. Many say the AK has better knockdown power and can kill with fewer shots. This is reminiscent, ladies and gentlemen, is it not, of the reports during the war of British soldiers picking up the boots left by retreating Iraqis because they were better fitted for the desert than the boots the Brits had been given. Also from the local dog trainer, wow. Now here, ladies and gentlemen, here's a head scratcher for you. Just imagine this. Think of this. Dateline Washington, frustrated at the failure to find Saddam Hussein's suspected stockpiles of chemical and biological weapons, U.S. and allied intelligence agencies have launched a major effort to determine if they were victims of bogus Iraqi defectors who planted disinformation to mislead the West before the war. Timing. It's all about timing. The goal, according to a senior U.S. intelligence official, is to see if false information was put out there and got into legitimate channels, and we were totally duped on it. Totally. Awesome, dude. He added, we're re-interviewing all our sources of information on this. This is the entire intelligence community, not just the U.S. So this would be what, Australia and Britain? Officials say former Iraqi operatives have confirmed since the war that Hussein's regime sent double agents disguised as defectors to the West to plant fabricated intelligence. In other cases, Baghdad apparently tricked legitimate defectors into funneling phony tips about weapons production and storage sites. You can't rule anything out, said an intelligent official. People are really second-guessing themselves now. While we're still on the subject of national importance. No, you know what, ladies and gentlemen? I'm going to skip subject of national importance and get right to what's really more important to me, which is being amused by Canada. Dateline Montreal, Canada has banned the public from smiling or frowning for passport photos. The foreign ministry announced this week. Canadians must send a photo with a neutral expression. Oh, see, I'm screwing up my neutral expression already. That means no laughing, smiles, or frowning. This according to ministry spokeswoman Suzanne Mounier. The mouth, she added, must be closed. So that's how you'll recognize Canadian passports. The closed mouth. Mounier admits the photo order had caused some controversy, but she said it had become necessary because of a recommendation by the International Civil Aviation Organization and to make it easier to recognize passport holders. We have already received photos with a small smile, she said, that we are ready to accept. But the smile amnesty will run out on November 3rd. Isn't that Canadian Thanksgiving? No, I think it's beginning of October is Canadian Thanksgiving. Set your calendars. Okay, now other issues of national importance. This is convicted felon, freed on a technicality, and now published author Oliver North.
Kudos to Fox for the way we covered this show, this war, and what happened, of course, is we put correspondents out there with units that were covering, that were doing the very kinds of things that are in Jericho Sanction. Covered it well by letting them tell their own stories. All those embedded correspondents are now out. And all we're getting, of course, is what the feed says happened here today. still trying to cover it well. Mike Toobin from Fox News Channel is out there with the 82nd Airborne Division, but that's it. And so what we're getting is the bad news spin, if you will, from the Criminal News Network and some of these other characters out there that never have anything good to say about America or Americans.
The Criminal News Network, and he chuckles, because, of course, he is a convicted felon. So just to review his grasp on the seriousness of the subject.
Kudos to Fox for the way we covered this show, this war.
Yeah. This show, this war. However, Oliver North does weigh in on Paul Bremer's interview with the Washington Post this week. Paul Bremer, our civilian head in Iraq, gave a headline-making interview in which he basically said, I'm running out of money, and this is going to cost so much. What he actually said was, you cannot exaggerate the amount of money the reconstruction of Iraq is going to cost. Gazillions. No? I can't. I can't exaggerate it. Tutillions. Nope. Can't. He's right. I can't do it. Anyway, Oliver North takes issue with Paul Bremer because Oliver North has had a lot of neat ideas in his time, you may remember, if you're old enough to remember the Iran-Contra affair. If not, look it up. Google it. Google yourself, babe. In any case, he's saying, and to the rising chorus in Washington that's saying, hey, you know, one way for this not to cost us so much money is for us to get the UN involved and get some other countries to help send some troops. Here is Oliver North on that subject.
You don't want whatever American forces are left over there to be subordinate to another military force. I remind people, in 1993, when the debacle happens in Mogadishu, Somalia, it's not an American commander who is senior there. It's a Pakistani general. And I'm not criticizing his credibility or his willingness to try to help us. But you never, ever want to do again what Bill Clinton did back in 1993 and make American forces subordinate in any way. The Quick Reaction Force was subordinate to a foreign national who happened to wear a blue helmet from the United Nations at the time. That, my friend, should never happen again.
My friend from the front page of the New York Times, Thursday of this week, of last week. Administration officials said the Somalian force in place in the early 1990s, however flawed from a political standpoint, might at least provide an administrative model for the Iraqi operation in the future. In that case, the United Nations force was put under the command of an American general who maintained direct control of American troops. From Black Hawk down, on UNOSOM II, a regular and robust UN peacekeeping structure with a primary humanitarian relief mission, was headed by U.S. Navy Admiral Jonathan Howe as special representative of the Secretary General. Task Force Ranger, which lost 18 soldiers on October 3, 1993, reported directly to CENTCOM, the United States Central Command. The UN Security Council Resolution 837, which set the mandate for Task Force Ranger, was drafted largely by the U.S. That, my friend, never happened.
Lord, it's a real motherfucker. real mother by God. Oh! Good God. Listen, got to go to a disco. Throw your troubles away. Dance to the music that the DJ plays. Well, all right. And then the lights come on. Yeah. Like you knew they would. Got cold. Gone home and face the music. That don't sound too good. Ain't that cold? Listen. Lord, it's a real motherfucker. It'll make you wanna run for cover, yeah. And if you look, you will discover, yeah. Lord, it's a real motherfucker, yeah. Oh!
Ladies and gentlemen, time for news of the media world. Rupert Murdoch, as you know, has a big investment in a Chinese satellite operation. So deep is his investment, both personal and financial, that when the Chinese protested his carrying of the BBC World News on his satellite hookup, he dumped the BBC. And then later, in an unconnected move, having divorced his longtime wife, married a Chinese official of his Chinese satellite service, who now reportedly does a lot of the negotiating for him with Chinese officials, Wendy Deng. Now this, Rupert Murdoch could see his Indian, as in India, news channel taken off the air after the Indian government announced new rules requiring it to be majority owned by a local company. Murdoch's Star TV network is controlled by his son James. It runs India's second most watched local language news channel, Star News. Star has already dispersed almost three quarters of the channel to six local investors after the government said in March the company's providing satellite news must be not more than 26% owned by foreign investors. It also stipulated that editorial control must rest in Indian hands. But following heavy pressure from rivals, the government is to tighten ownership regulations even further. It will require foreign satellite news channels to be majority owned by a dominant Indian partner. Star has 4 weeks to comply with the new rules. In an open letter, Star accused its rivals of running a media campaign calculated to confuse people and to misrepresent the facts. Star India generates about $200 million a year. So they're going to have to comply, it looks like, James Murdoch and his company, going to have to comply one way or another.
Well, that was a wonderful meal, Gepaya.
Thank you, James. I take great pleasure in cooking.
You cooked all that?
No, tonight I ordered in, but I do take great pleasure in cooking on days when I have the time.
Oh, that's right. You're a busy girl, aren't you?
As you well know, given our current staffing levels, running the accounting department of Star TV is a full-time job and then half of another.
That's cute. This is the dimmer switch for the lights here?
No. That's the remote for the toilet.
Say, I'm learning so much about India. I mean, it's true, you can't really run a country's only national television news service without learning something about the place first. Yeah, I mean, back in the States, no one would dream this country was so advanced. You operated your commodes by remote control.
Yes, there's that. But also, our plumbing can be a bit erratic, and you don't want to be too nearby when it overflushes.
Ah, I'll just put this down then.
So, James, you said we had important business to discuss?
Yes, as I did. And we do. Let me ask you something, Gupia. Mm-hmm. Has anyone ever told you that you have the brownest eyes in the world?
No, really? Do you think so?
I know so. You know, we Murdochs know a little something about eyeballs since we happen to control so many of them. And yours are truly spellbinding.
I'm afraid I must be blushing now.
Well, you can't tell.
No?
Nuh-uh. So, I know this must come to you as something of a surprise. Heck, it even surprised me when the idea popped into my mind and that of my dad. But if I'm not mistaken, you're not seeing anyone at the moment, are you?
Why, no, I'm not, but... And excuse me, please, for asking, but we're a very private people. You don't have some electronic way of tracking the social activities of your executives?
I wish. No, I just gave your assistant 2 Simpsons DVDs and a carton of American Coke.
Ah. So, Mr. Murdoch.
James.
Were you asking for any reason in particular?
Gepaya. You're a very lovely, smart, ambitious, and Punjabi woman. I know this sounds corny to say it, but I think I've fallen under your spell.
Oh, James, it's probably just the ghee.
I know it must seem crazy to you. A guy comes halfway around the globe to take a routine tour of a local television facility and finds himself falling head over heels in love with an exotic executive at that very facility. I mean, things like that only happen to my father.
Head over heels?
Mm-hmm.
Exotic? Oh, James, I'm wearing a plain old Ann Taylor dotty. I'm about as exotic as the Mall of America.
Gepaya, I have to get on a plane tomorrow morning at 11:15. What would you think of an 8 a.m. wedding?
You cannot be serious. My mother and father are many hundreds of miles away.
We'll get them a video link up. They'll get a better view than if they were in the front pew of... I'm sorry, do Hindus have churches?
We're Episcopal.
Darling, if you say yes, I can offer you a life totally unlike anything you've experienced up to now. You'll be pampered and privileged and, of course, loved. You'll get the New York Post home-delivered same day. You'll be the chief operating executive of the dominant satellite television operator in all the Indian subcontinent.
James, this is all so amazing, but please be realistic. What can I possibly give to you?
Just your love. And the dominant satellite television operator in the Indian subcontinent.
I'm sorry. I must be blushing again. This is all so sudden.
No, you really can't tell about the blushing.
But what would you do if I say no?
No. I'll feel disappointed. Rejected. And we'll waste a lot of money over the next 6 months getting the law changed.
I see.
I'm sure in the fullness of time, perhaps you could come to love me just a little.
Perhaps. I can continue to live here.
Part time, if you like. I'd come over with you, if you like. Or not, if you like.
My goodness. There is so much to think about.
Mm-hmm. Tell you what. Why don't I help myself to some of that yogurt stuff? And you can have some privacy in the kitchen and go over the prenup.
All right, James.
All right, goodbye.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you. I think you better clean your radio there. It sounds a little scratchy. This is actually from a consumer newspaper, but it's given information that was only known to the trade until now, so I'll read it for you. It's news of public broadcasting, of course, ladies and gentlemen. A growing trend in public TV, WLIW Long Island, the second public television station in the New York area, produces more hours of fundraising programs for national distribution than any other station, according to the Public Broadcasting Service. They produce travelogues, interrupted frequently by a TV studio where two hosts urge viewers of the local station to call in their donations. Terrell Cass and Laura Savini talk about the value of the station and videotapes that are available of the show that you're watching. Cass, Savini, and the people taking pledge calls in the background aren't speaking from whatever station you're watching. They're on Long Island at the studios of WLIW, where Cass and Savini are top executives. The phone calls aren't from your local station, but residents of metropolitan New York, and the pledge break isn't live. It was taped weeks, months, or even years ago. WLIW has conceived dozens of shows that experts say get people to open their wallets by tugging at heartstrings and appealing to ethnic pride or nostalgia. The shows help public TV stations to reduce their costs by serving as a substitute for live on-air fundraising. WLIW provides the entertainment, the beggars, and even the thank you gifts. All that's left for your local station to do is hire a phone bank to answer the pledge calls and have somebody around to play the videotapes. Executives at some public TV stations acknowledge that in using generic fundraisers from WLIW, they risk misleading some viewers. An official at Maryland Public Television says some of her audience think Cass and Savini work there. Some public TV executives and experts, I'd like to talk to these experts for a moment, worry that growing reliance on canned fundraising programs may undermine stations' ties to their communities and the public's identification with station officials who determine what's aired. Says Robert J. Thompson, founder of Syracuse University's Center for the Study of Popular Television. Ugh. The whole notion of virtual fundraisers means you essentially make invisible the people who are in fact responsible for making the decisions at the station. PBS uses about $10 million from member stations to commission films and purchase broadcast rights for shows for use during pledge drives. They average between $85,000 and $150,000 per show. Individual stations then choose which programs they think will spur giving and when to air them. Self-help gurus such as Suze Orman and Gary Null have brought in millions of pledge dollars. Ditto for Doo-Wop 50, The Three Tenors, Les Miserables, and other musical spectaculars. Each show includes canned or virtual pledge breaks in which WLIW officials encourage viewers to make a donation. The breaks are scrutinized by PBS to ensure compliance with its guidelines that require generic language, support public television, give to this station, emphasis on the mission of public TV. I'm not here selling videotapes. This is a community asset worthy of your support. And were filmed using volunteers who answered real pledge calls at some point. Says a public television spokesperson, we do not allow producers to have fake phones ringing. We like ringing phones because we think it helps people to get into the spirit of interacting with their local public television station. However, the spokesperson acknowledged some audience members are misled into thinking the people asking them for money are from the station down the street, not thousands of miles away. What we've noticed, said the spokesperson, is the viewer cares a heck of a lot less about what's local and what's national. You know what, ladies and gentlemen? I may not have time for the apologies of the week because I had to read the trades for you. It's a copyrighted feature. Let's see if I can get in a couple of apologies here. Well, we'll try this first. Yeah, have to do that first. The apologies of the week. Slovakia is marking the 35th anniversary of the invasion of former Czechoslovakia. His party chairman, or actually, sorry, the Parliamentary Communist Party chairman, Jozef Zefč of Slovakia, said he and his party wanted to apologize to all who suffered any wrongdoings during that period. Thank you for that. PepsiCo India apologized for using the name of Health and Family Welfare Minister Sushma Swaraj in its advertisement to endorse the company's products. There was some concern about the healthiness of the water used in Pepsi and Coke. Britain's National Health Service apologized to a black woman who was offered a white prosthetic foot because it was cheaper than one matching her skin color. She was told by a doctor if she wanted a black artificial foot, she would have to buy it privately and would cost $5,000. When she went to look at the feet, prosthetics, he started showing me some of them. There were different types, but they were all pinky colors. I said, I'll obviously have one to match my leg, won't I? But he said, no, we only have pink ones. Said the consultant at the Oxford Hospital, unfortunately, although some funding has recently become available for providing more realistic skin covers, as yet this does not apply to residents of Berkshire. And senior officials at England's National Grid have apologized for this week's blackout. It lasted 30 minutes. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, the short version. Yeah, we can get it all in. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this edition of the show. The program returns next week on this same time on these same stations on NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world via the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America on the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz, across North America on Sirius satellite radio, and around the world via the internet at two different locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And
do you support gay marriage?
It would be just like gay marriage just being for men and women, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions. It originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.